Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, Wednesday edition. You know, yesterday we started the show. We played Ethel Merman, Everything's Coming Up Roses, because the Dow was soaring. It was way beyond 26,000 and looked like it was never going to look back. And then it gave up. I think everything ended the day. Did the Dow end the day down yesterday or just barely up?
Barely up below 26,000. But right. Right now it's back above 26,000.
Right. So we're on another nice run. But I'm not going to play Ethel Merman because once burned, twice shy.
Okay.
I think we've had enough Ethel for 2018.
Well, you know, that stretch, the time it took to go from 25,000 to 26,000 was a blink of an eye.
Right. And it's true to point out that each thousand increment means less as right. the number of thousands gets bigger.
Percentage-wise,
yeah. It's less, but... Mm-hmm. Man, 7 days is not very many days.
Mm-hmm. And 26,000, win any bets on 27?
Well, I'll have to consult Ethel on that, but I'm not going to do it. You had a story about Apple and bringing money back, right? That's one of the big things they say about this new tax law.
Yeah, we're just getting some bits and pieces of this. CNBC is reporting that Apple has put out a plan, or its blueprint anyway, for what it's going to do with the over $200 billion of cash it has sitting overseas, and repatriating some of that money to get put to work here in the United States was one of the goals of the tax plan. And reportedly, Apple is going to repatriate about 15% of that money and bring it back.
Wait a minute, we want more.
Well, you would think that that would be the plan, but that, at least initially, is what Apple is reporting it is going to be doing, which it claims is going to, over a period of 5 years, produce about $350 billion worth of value to the economy. It's going to put a bunch of money into capital improvements and new capital building. They just finished that big spaceship thing out in California, but apparently they're going to be adding new facilities and also adding about 20,000 jobs. We don't know if all of those 20,000 jobs are going to be in the United States or not, but at least Apple is taking some of that big pile of Scrooge McDuck cash it has.
Well, okay, so two things. I'm reading that it is 20,000 jobs in the U.S.
Okay.
But what would they be doing? I mean, it seems like we're pretty Apple saturated right now. It's pretty much this country's Apple sauce now.
Well, perhaps Apple has a new product that is not telling you about yet, Steve, and it's going to work on that. I don't know.
And the other than about the 15%, I think you said. So the idea was, what we were told is that, you know, these companies would have great incentive to bring the money back. Now, it sounds like they're bringing a lot of money back, but if it's only 15%, what is it you think that's still attractive to keeping it overseas? I mean, obviously they've got overseas business too.
Sure. Yeah, well, I don't know. It is a global business, and perhaps that is why they're leaving it over there. And again, maybe it makes more sense for them to not pay the tax on it and just leave it there for now.
All right, Jerome Powell was approved by the Senate Banking Committee as Fed Chair today, and he's got the distinction of having been approved twice, I guess, right? Because they did it late last year.
Congratulations to him, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're really super sure.
Well, he was widely accepted and praised as a good choice to replace Janet Yellen.
And so Senate approval should be fairly easy there.
Yes.
Did you buy any Bitcoins?
It's kind of a gag gift for Christmas. I bought all of my my kids and grandkids and a couple of friends. I bought them like $25 worth of not Bitcoin, but one of the other cryptocurrencies. And you know, that $25 is now worth about 10.
Thanks, Grandpa.
Yeah,
he did it again. Grandpa did it again.
Yeah.
But so it's lost. I was reading with $365 billion in value over the last 10 days. Bitcoin has.
Yeah, Bitcoin's down under $10,000.
Down 50% since December. But I mean, right? We all saw this coming because the increase was just too fast and too...
Pure speculation.
Right.
And people hoping to jump on the train and jump off before the train ran off the tracks.
It became sort of a game more than an investment in late December.
Yeah, and there are other, besides Bitcoin, there are other cryptocurrencies. Ripple is one that has been doing very well. It's a lot less expensive than Bitcoin, and it's been increasing rapidly. But still, you got to look at, you know, what's behind this? What's the basis for this cryptocurrency? And you're seeing, I think, some of the hesitancy on the part of investors to stay in very long.
Okay, so we've got that. Government shutdown coming on Friday, yes or no?
I don't know.
Well, that wasn't one of my options, Steve.
It was a yes or no.
I mean, you know, yesterday I was talking to John Najarian, and he knows a heck of a lot more than me.
Yes.
Said he didn't think either side would have the stomach for it. I certainly didn't see it happening. But as we get closer now, I don't see movement toward... I mean, the House is considering this plan that would do the child health care bill with the spending, but everyone kind of agrees that should be included. So that's not much of a give to the Democrats. It doesn't include anything with DACA. So I just don't see much movement.
Well, it's only Wednesday.
Okay, so we got 48 hours.
Right.
And what happens if they do shut it down? What happens on Wall Street?
Well, let me ask you this: what are the how many votes do they have to either
they
go
need,
one way or the other?
They need 60 in the Senate, right?
Is it 60?
I think they do. Yeah, I don't think it's just a simple 50.
Yeah, I don't know. Last time this happened was what, 2013?
I don't know. Yeah. I thought it never happened ever, and then it started happening every other year.
No,
so
I think 13 was, if I recall correctly, okay. Reading about it. Hey, life goes on. It doesn't stay shut down forever.
It's not like anyone's going to Yellowstone this weekend anyway, right?
Unless
they want a snowshoe, I guess they would be.
Or snowmobile or whatever they do out there.
All right, Steve Alexander in the WGN business office. Keep us posted through the hour here, will you?
I'll try.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Kim, stick around for a second. That top story, the first story you had in your newscast, had to do with travel and tourism, and they're worried, or what was that about?
Well, it's not that they're worried, but the National U.S. Travel Association wants people to take January 30th to plan for their vacations. Like, look at the time off you have, plan for a vacation. They're going to promote it using the hashtag plan for vacation. They're going to be offering deals and places on trips. So, you know, they're just trying to, I guess, be aggressive in getting people to go out of town or go out of the country and, you know, plan a vacation.
I don't know if it was related. Maybe it's not related, because I was seeing some statistics earlier today about international travel around the world is booming. It's going up and up. But travelers coming to the U.S. from overseas actually dropped 4% when you look at the period from January of last year to July. So the first 7 months of the year, fewer and fewer people are coming here to the U.S. to visit.
Did they give a reason? Or
I didn't see a reason.
I'm wondering if it's our political climate.
Well, it had dropped the year before as well by 2%. So that might dismiss the political climate argument a little bit, but maybe not, because, you know, it was pretty ugly the year before during the campaign, too. But we want foreign passengers, foreign travelers here, because they stay longer, they spend more money, and that's good for all of us, especially guys like Frank Sennett at Crane Chicago Business. Cranes, Frank, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Well, thank you, Steve.
So we've talked about tourism and travel. The mayor keeps those statistics, and I think he just announced a new record, I think, last week or the week before. Things are going pretty well here.
Yeah, it seems like it. The streets are, you know, still crowded when I try to walk up Michigan Avenue. So,
all right, let's go to McKinley Park, because you guys have a story about these two old Army warehouses. I love this story, built in 1918. Now, Frank, I didn't see a reference in the piece written by Albie Gollum, but it might have been there. But it seems to me these are two big buildings on Pershing Road that they were at one time the Chicago School Board headquarters. Is that what we're talking about?
I believe so. Okay. And one of the reasons I flagged the story, the reason I like it so much, is we've talked so much about jobs moving into the Central City area and, you know, the old Chicago Post Office was a site potentially for Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. here's a development initiative to try to bring jobs into a neighborhood outside of the central city.
Oh, man, I spent a lot of time in that building in the 80s with people like Jackie Vaughn and Mayor Harold Washington. That's kind of where I cut my teeth with the teacher strike in 87 and all of that. So the building looked pretty familiar to me. I didn't know the history that it was at one time those two buildings were the largest warehouses in the world. And it was kind of funky inside for the Board of Education headquarters. So that's the problem, right? They're putting it out to redevelopment to try to bring jobs or apartments or things into McKinley Park, and they're using a competition to do it. Explain that for me.
Yeah, they're trying to get a little excitement going. They were both built in 1918, two six-story structures, 570,000 square feet, but there's a lot of pillars and posts inside, as you say, kind of funky space and kind of a funky neighborhood. So to get some excitement going, the city's offering them up to developers as part of an international design competition sponsored by C40, which is a global network of cities working together to address climate change. So Chicago Community Development Commission unanimously voted to solicit developers for the building, and they're required to submit their qualifications to the city by May 4th. And try to, you know, create some job activity, some sustainable office environment with this design competition. So hopefully it leads to something, although it's been privately on the market for a couple of years and not much happened. So they're trying to really jumpstart some interest.
So the idea is it would be residential or mixed use or industrial, any idea?
Well, their first priority is to try to get some job creation in the neighborhood, but it may turn out that the best use for the buildings is ultimately residential. So that is probably number two on the list, but number one is if they could get either some job creation, some companies in their employers, or mixed use.
Probably. All right. My Ford Probe died on 39th Street right in front of the school board headquarters. I'm going to say November of 1987. Had to get a tow. All right, so there's that. I don't want to go back to it, but hopefully they'll figure out a way to fix that. You also pulled a story about Motorola Solutions, which is a venture capital fund from Motorola, I guess, and what the money they've turned on some technology that's getting quite a lot of use in Chicago.
Yeah, so I thought this was a really unique and interesting story. We hear a lot about tech investment in apps that, you know, make our leisure lives better, et cetera, but don't necessarily improve quality of life. So Motorola Solutions Venture Capital had invested in the technology behind ShotSpotter, which is the gunshot detection technology that Chicago police say has helped reduce shootings in one of the city's most violent neighborhoods. So good technology, you know, application of technology to actually make lives better. Well, they put in investment a few years ago in 2012 for $500,000. They're cashing in. Their good works are paying off to the tune of $14.2 million.
So wow.
They made a very nice return on investment for investing in this technology.
And it seems to be having quite an impact in the city of Chicago. And I would imagine if there's that kind of money involved, there are many other cities using it as well.
Yeah, so it's hopefully going to roll out and improve communities nationwide. So I guess I call that a win-win.
That's a win-win-win. And speaking of win, Mayor Emanuel, I think, is hoping to win a third term coming up. We talked a lot about Gary McCarthy running to challenge him. Greg Hines has a piece, though, on Troy Laravia, right? It's Laravia? I have a hard time with his name.
Yeah, Laravia, that's the pronunciation. I looked it up to make sure before the segment as well. We're both pros. I like that.
Well, it's one of those things where you know, and then once you say it out loud, it still doesn't feel so good. But Troy was a principal who got ousted after being sort of a thorn in the side of the mayor and of CPS?
Yeah, so he is an activist. He left the Chicago Public Schools, got ousted from Lakeview Elementary School in 2016 after frequently clashing with the mayor's office about school funding levels. And he, you know, went so far as to call the mayor's office incompetent. He leveled some very serious charges. And so now he's fired up and ready to go. Obviously, he's got some name recognition issues. You know, people are going to have his name pronounced correctly on their lips in order to have a chance against Emanuel. But he feels that if Gary McCarthy throws his hat in the ring, it might take some votes from the more conservative end of the voting spectrum in Chicago, and he could run to the left of Rahm and be a progressive candidate, which you know, was his main challenger last time.
So let's explain that a little bit more then. So McCarthy takes away the cops, the firemen, the more conservative voters in the city. Emanuel gets what Emanuel gets, but then if McCarthy is chipping away at Emanuel's vote from the right, that means LaRavier would need fewer votes to win the nomination, or at least to get into a runoff, I should say. And if he can get this grassroots movement, he could sort of come at him from the left.
Right. So Chuy Garcia was not able to pick off Ron, but the thought is maybe in a three-way race, you've got more shot at an energized left. And certainly the political moment right now, we're seeing a lot of special elections for state races around the country. There's a resurgence of, you know, progressive grassroots voters putting Democrats in office. There's seems to be a Democratic wave here. Now, this is, you know, Democrats running against each other, but in terms of the political slant, you know, the energy seems to be coming from the progressive left, right?
Grassroots, to me, if you call yourself grassroots, that often means underfunded.
And for sure.
That's certainly the case.
He's raised 15 grand so far, which I think is, you know, at the bottom of Rom's shoe as he walks out of his last fundraiser. Right.
And I love the part of the story that Hines has is that a $1,000 check came from someone in Georgia who apparently just read about him, likes him, and decided to contribute.
Yeah, and you're seeing a lot of the special elections around the country, both at the state and congressional levels in the past year or so. There's been a lot of outside funding at the grassroots level from people who, you know, see a story online and click the web link to donate. And, of course, your political opponent uses that against you and says, hey, you know, he's just supported by outsiders.
Right.
So that it's a double-edged sword, right?
Almost 15% of his money comes from Kentucky. What's that about? All right.
Exactly.
Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Frank Sennett, great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1251 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio along a beautiful, chilly Michigan Avenue. Still people walking up and down, though, getting to where they need to be. On a phone line, Jill Gonzalez from Bankrate.com, who joins us from time to time to talk about what they're up to at Bankrate. Welcome back, Jill. Nice to talk to you.
Hey there. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Okay, so you guys did a study on best states to retire to. And I don't know if you're sitting in Illinois, if we should want us to be one, or if we're really looking at exterior states, others that we're going to retire to. I suppose that it would be nice if Illinois was a great destination state, too. As it comes down in this study, we're ranked number 31, which is a little below middle of the pack, right? What's holding us back besides the 4 degrees today?
Right. So this is a Wallet Hub study that looked at all 50 states here. So Illinois ranking 31st out of 50 obviously is more toward the bottom. But apart from the weather...
We're going to say lower middle, Jill. We'll say lower middle.
Sure.
Okay.
Apart from the weather, which we did include, I mean, taxes play a huge part of this, especially when you're living on a fixed income. Illinois has higher taxes, and it has some great things because of that, mainly some great education, especially when you get to upper education. But when you're retired, you kind of care less about that. So things like taxation, especially on pension, when it comes to estate or inheritance tax, those types of things start to matter more. And Illinois is not as friendly in those environments.
Number one is Florida, then Colorado, South Dakota, which might be a little surprise because I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're an outdoor person, the quality of life improves there. Iowa was number four. What was so attractive about Iowa? Have you been there? I have.
I have, yes. As a Big Tenner, I've been to Iowa.
Oh, okay.
And they beat out Illinois specifically, I mean, on affordability, just lower cost of living, a lot better taxes, not taxing any of those things that we discussed, Social Security, pension, estate, inheritance. So that definitely helps.
We're talking to Jill Gonzalez, an analyst at WalletHub.com. I might have given you a different job there a few minutes ago. I'm sorry about that, Jill.
No worries.
And number 50 is Kentucky. And now I'm thinking Kentucky probably has a lower cost of living. The weather's not too bad. What makes Kentucky so unattractive?
Lower cost of living, but actually does tax pension. So as a retiree, not the most attractive taxation policies there. And when we're just looking at other types of things, healthcare especially, it's costlier than you might think in Kentucky, and it's a lot less accessible. They're going through a doctor and nurse shortage right now, geriatricians, etc. So that is something that obviously retirees care more about.
You talked about health care, and one of the things you studied in this survey was the cost of, I think the phrase you used for it was elderly housekeeping. Now, I'm assuming that means sort of live-in care or look-in care?
Yes, we looked at live-in care, in-home services, adult day health care, all of those types of things. So Illinois is pretty pricey. I will say the quality is better. In some states, you get high costs and low quality. So Illinois at least has this sense of you get what you pay for there.
And Louisiana has the lowest cost when it comes to that.
Yes, right. Lowest cost, but unfortunately not the highest quality either.
Oh, really? So, right, so you might not be paying for very much. Is that because you just can't understand the Louisiana accent? It doesn't help you?
I'll leave that up to you, Steve.
Okay.
I can understand it.
So another thing that jumped out at me looking at these numbers is your assessment of the lowest property crime rate. And the state number one there is New Hampshire, which probably isn't a great surprise. But number two is New Jersey, and number three is New York. That probably had to be a little surprising to you, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, when we're looking at things like property crime, one thing that we include in there is fraud, is identity theft. And unfortunately, senior citizens are really the prime targets there. So people tend to look for high population states where they are and go after them. So that's another thing that we've tried to keep an eye on.
Alaska has the highest number of people or percentage of people over 65 still working. Do you know, does that mean because they have to work up there longer, or because if you go to Alaska, you just tend to be a heartier soul too?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a couple of different things. I think that, one, people live longer there. They tend to work longer there, kind of push off retirement for a little bit more. I think that has to do with the industries that are in Alaska as well. We see that in a lot of Midwestern states, Iowa, South Dakota included. So I think that's one thing, and hopefully they build up savings that whole time.
Jill Gonzalez is an analyst for WalletHub.com. All right, Jill, where are you going to retire to?
That is something I'll ask myself in a long time.
A long time.
Good and bad.
Oh, one more then. So Idaho is number eight as most retired too, which I don't think is hugely surprising. I think we mentioned this just last week or the week before. It's the fastest growing state among the 50. What's so attractive for retirees in Idaho?
So one other thing that we looked into here, because so many people are pushing off retirement or reentering the workforce after they've retired, is the elderly unemployment rate, elderly job opportunities and labor force. And that is, again, pretty hardy in Idaho. So it seems like people continue to move there, not only before retirement, but really to continue working, possibly kind of go into a half-retirement stage.
Check out more at WalletHub.com. I'm going to retire before you, Jill, so I'll be looking at this a little more earnestly than you.
More power to you, Steve.